All right, welcome back. We are about to kick off today's Growth Summit's lesson on cultivating COIs. You are all in for a very special treat because I have with me Tiffany Charles of Destiny Capital and Entrepreneur Aligned, which is a whole fun story all by itself. But Tiffany has been, well, she started as a private client, what, 5 or 6 years ago at this point? Can't believe it's been so many years. I think I'm still the same age, by the way. And then her firm became a member of Limitless. Part of her visioning was realizing that that was not the ideal firm for her. It's a great relationship. We have a great relationship. She ultimately moved on to what is Destiny Capital, to join Jared, who many of you know. And so she has applied the Limitless concepts in a private client firm, as a member of Limitless, as a Limitless coach in lifestyle, then as a Limitless coach in leaders. And they've done a lot of the leaders' work as well. So, one of the things that Tiffany is particularly good at and has a real talent for is cultivating COI relationships. So, I'm always very blessed when she spends time to join us every year when we do this lesson because it's kind of become like our tag team thing now. I'd be like, oh, I was like, I'd be so lonely doing it by myself. Doing it without Tiffany. So Tiffany, welcome and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Super excited to be here with you guys, and
Yep.
let's talk professional partnerships and how we get them to refer.
Well, and I think the thing that Tiffany and I talked so much about it came up in the prior call. Ian had a question around, why CPA or COI relationships, because there's so many COIs that there can be. Why don't these relationships always work, or why don't they take off? And the point that I made was, right, go to the next lesson. But one of the big mistakes we make is we don't play a long game, right? We're like, hey, we had lunch, yay, we're all my clients, so that didn't work, next. And I think what you've done, just sort of with the core practices and then how you've evolved them in your firm, is there anything you just want to talk about in terms of like what's a reasonable, not so much like X number of days or month, but to that question of why am I struggling to develop center of influence relationships around this theme, what would you say to that?
I mean, intentionality and it truly being like a business development relationship is usually a big role. And like, just similar to the prospect process that you have with your clients is like uncovering, are we a good fit to be serving one another? Is there going to be reciprocity in this relationship? And then how do we really measure value and success out of that relationship? And having that more as an upfront conversation has been a big thing that we've done. And so like, the time frame can it varies COI to COI, but there is a long-term game here. And over the years, I've now been doing it, the COI component, for close to 10 years in wealth management, which is crazy to think. But this year alone, about 60% of our referrals have been COI based. So it's a long game, but then once they start coming through, they come consistently through. I've learned how to fast track aspects of that and how we now identify what are key traits, like what are we looking for, and can we set some parameters around when to start expecting some referrals on both sides, and being super clear about our abilities if we can or can't, and what would that exchange be if we can't be the referrer, but they can be a good referrer to us.
Yeah, we had a conversation, excuse me, a little bit earlier about there's a difference between like, just leaning in and getting started, right? Like, hey, I like you. We had lunch. Where are the clients? And really playing a long game where you consistently get three, four, five referrals from,
Correct.
right, a trusted partner on a consistent basis. And that is no different than I use, right, spousal relationships. You don't typically, I gave this example once and someone said it happened. So I have to use the caveat. You don't typically go to lunch, right? And then nothing, and then you're married 12 months later, right? There's incremental steps along the way. And the point that I always make is we have to be responsible for moving that ball down the field yard by yard by yard. We get together and we like them and they like us. And then when we don't understand why they aren't doing their part, and it's because they're busy and they're comfortable and they aren't nearly as motivated as you. And so, right, we have to ultimately take responsibility for moving that ball, aka relationship, down the field, like literally play by play by play. We don't just get to show up, wear the cute uniform, get the trophy, and go home, right? There's real work that goes into it. And I think that's what Tiffany's done such a good job of, is being so intentional about it.
Is that key for me to talk about intentionality? Okay.
Has your picture on it and everything.
I saw the pictures below. Yeah, and being intentional is the name of the game. When I started back with Steph, I think it was 2018, Stephanie. So we are the same age. I said, my God, I'm doing everything right. So I never ate lunch alone. I didn't eat breakfast alone. Most of the times I was out in the evenings networking, and I was like making a ton of friends and no business. And that was really hard because I was in a position of like my income was 100% dependent upon gaining new business through the door. And I'm like, I'm doing everything I have been trained to do. I am cold calling. I'm sitting in front. I'm doing everything. I'm calling every professional. I'm out there. I'm in all the groups, and I'm not getting to a place of new business walking through the door. And so a part of it was not being patient. And then a part of it was the very standard lunch that most people do, which is we go to lunch with these COIs and we talk personally. We just try to connect as people. And then the last 5 minutes, we're like, we should totally do business together. Let's refer somebody. That's great. And then you go back and you set your CRM and you're like, yay, like I said what I needed to say. And 6 months, let me go and do that again. And then you have a repeat of that exact same lunch where you're talking. Instead, I just created intentionality around the process of like, how do we? I told Steph, I was like, I can't have any more friends. Like, I need business. Like, and I need to find ways to narrow down how many of these lunches I'm doing and deepening these relationships. So we created a process, and it's very similar to the prospect process where, and through that, what I learned is both sides were really bad at business development. Neither one knew how to set themselves up, share what they needed to share to create more opportunities to learn how we can refer to one another, and then really explore, are we even a good fit? You know, I was coming out as a young female in her 30s, and I was meeting, you know, some older men in their back nine of their career that had all of the, you know, they had their buddies that they were doing business with. Like, I stood no chance of getting business there because they already had their defined relationships. So how did I find a place where there was more equivalence to where we were at in career, in hunger, in the types of clients that we were serving, and that there was relationship capacity and equity opportunity truly there? And so, just similar to the prospect process, it's like upfront, let's identify if there's a good mutual fit here. And if there isn't, let's be super realistic about the time that we're spending and the time that we all have in business development to put towards business, like growing our businesses. Number two, then let's learn about each other's services in a deeper way. And then number three, let's start making commitments to one another. Like, what does success look like in our relationship in the next 6 months? And I used to do that over the series of three meetings. And over the years, it's gotten down to like one to two meetings, just like maybe a prospect process naturally would, as you get more efficient with those conversations, and or you build enough relationships that you're now on the other side of it where I'm protecting my time a tad bit more, because we have 5 to 7 COIs that are consistently referring 3 to 5 households a year. So now I'm just looking to maintain, but creating a process and taking the approach that both people are probably not the strongest at business development. If we just create a process for us to follow, you're naturally getting a leg up on most people out there.
And Tiffany said a couple of things that I think are really important to catch. One is, as evidenced on the slide, there's a lot of intentionality. Like you're going to hear, like marketers typically, people, creative e-marketers don't tend to have that kind of intentionality and structure. And that's, as we've talked so much about, so good marketing is much about systems and science and data as it is about sexy and sizzle and right, like truly, because that's what makes it work. Standing out isn't just your client profile. With centers of influence, having a unique client profile, a differentiator, is huge because you're now able to say, hey, you may have other relationships or advisors that you refer to, And when you have someone that's an entrepreneur in this exact zone, or someone who's this or someone who's that, that's really our lane. And we, anyone else, really, you should send somewhere else. But these, because now you're creating that distinction in their mind that their brain's like, well, I always refer to Bob, but Tiffany's all about this kind of client. Like, yeah, I should at least take a look at that, right? So one, do get really clear about the client profile. The more narrow that is, the less you're competing with every other advisor they've ever met or are currently working with. Two, I made a note because she said it, and we don't call it out specifically in this lesson. We talk so much about it in marketing plan and choose your channel, but how many things did you hear Tiffany describe she was doing when she went down the list of just COI activities? Like, there was at least 10 there, if not more, right? So don't spread yourself too thin, right? How many people you're approaching and how you're approaching them. You want to be really intentional about that because, as Tiffany pointed out, it will really work if you lay those tracks. And that's the third piece, is she set a structure. She didn't just go to a like meeting anymore. What we essentially said is, hey, we got to do all that stuff. We got to do seeding. We got to set expectations. We have to set a next step. How do we evolve that? Hey, we're going to say, hey, we know you're great and we're great. We talk, everybody refers. We say, we're like, but we really want to do stuff. How about you? Yeah, okay, great. Like, there's a way to take them through that conversation. Tiffany literally says, this is what the benefit of this relationship, like, again, you're not going into cheeky sales mode. You're going into credible partner. Are you looking for the same things that I'm looking for? It's really a fit conversation. And we're going to get into the details of each of those steps, but I want to be really clear. Like, if you don't stand out, if you spread yourself too thin, that's a double whammy. If you don't have a structure, you're playing that game of whack-a-mole we talk about, where, like, Tiffany, you're literally spinning from thing to thing. I got to spend a little time here, and I got to spend a little time here, and I got to spend a little time here, and I'm spinning and spinning. And I was using you as an example earlier. Like, you can spend 60 or 70 hours a week engaging in a lot of activity and still feeling really defeated about the results because you're like, I have no more time. I've tried everything. And it really feels like you can't get out from under that if you're not careful. Tiffany, some of these probably look familiar to you. You remember our early conversations. These are a lot of the limiting beliefs. First, for all of you, when we go COI relationships don't work, first thing my brain goes to is, what's the story that you're telling yourself? There's a story that you're telling yourself if you're saying it's hard or it doesn't work. I'm not saying there has not been experiences where you go to lunch and nothing happens, or someone says and time doesn't get really protracted. Those are actual events that happen. The story of COIs just don't work is really an unsolvable riddle. If that's the attitude, yeah, they don't work. If we can get clear about where we think they don't work so that we can actually challenge that and then, right, clarify whether it's true or not. Like, hey, COIs are a waste of time. They eat my lunch, but they don't ever refer anyone. Really? Like, they do, but why? Is it because you don't have a good follow-up system and you don't create clear expectations? Like, you just made a good friend? They don't, like, if you think about it, they don't know what to expect. You don't. Tiffany will be like, let's do this. I'll follow up here. Let's look for three people. Like, is that okay with you? Most of the time we're like, great, let's check in soon, which is code for go back and do things exactly the same. Right. So is it really that they're a waste of time? Are we not finding the right ones? Or are we not engaging with them in the right ways? Two, they don't send me clients. We're going to talk a lot about this. The wrong ones won't. The right ones will, but you've got to build that partnership. And that's the right, you've got to play the long game, as we talk about. And we're going to talk in a little bit. You actually have to take a team approach, which everyone says they do, and very few firms actually do. Tiff, I know this one, right? I send more referrals than I get. How do you guys handle that one? What are your thoughts on that one?
I don't look at reciprocity for a one-to-one necessarily, because there's just going to be certain areas where we can just be the ones that refer more, and the other way around as well, where certain COIs can refer us more as well. I think that is also a limiting belief of like it has to be this like equal balance, or what does that look like? And that's not what we're there. I mean, referability, and do they have the right clients? How many of them? What are their opportunities? How are they engaging in those conversations to look for them? And there's going to be years and life that ebb and flow over time. But if they're, sending me a couple a year that are good, solid, qualified clients, then that's great. And we send them 10, then that's great too, because we're intertwining more and more on client experience, which then over time just keeps creating the advocacy with also less time having to be spent on just BD in itself. So I always caution the one for one, just accounting. I mean, Stephanie, I think you said it early on, you might have been talking about marriage and relationships, but accounting rarely has a place in relationships. And so you want to be smart, and make sure that there's opportunities there. And if there's nothing, then you want to be careful about how you're spending your time. However, I think that it's just really about like the uncovering of the opportunities, and education is usually a big component regarding referrals. So there have been many times that I've had to go back to be like, we're not here, but I know the clients that you have, and I know the work that you're doing. And it's still to this day, sometimes I'm like, I've talked to you like 100 times over the course of 10 years, but like just now it hit, right? In a certain way that's adding another flow. So you just have to think about re-education as an opportunity for either not getting the number of referrals, or you would like more, and or that there is it just skipped my mind, but that they're not sending the numbers, and or that they don't have the ability to do so. Like a lot of times it's not that they don't have the ability, it's like they just don't know how to put you in, or what's the opening line, or how do we make that work.
And that goes back to, right, we can seed, we can set expectations. So like we can really start to look at what are the barriers, the roadblocks that we face, and how do we start to subtly integrate those into the relationship? And we'll talk about some of those ideas. So you can see, right, there's obviously a few here. There's obviously a few more that you all face. I think the fundamental question is, what are the stories that are stuck in you? Because here's the thing I know. Everything on that screen is true. It's happened to you. It happened to me. It happened to me 50 times, which is why I got frustrated and found fixes. It's true. But it's not. But it's not, because there are people like me and Tiffany and others who have amazing referral relationships. Like I've built more million-dollar practices on COIs than anything else. You don't do it in 12 months. Right, but over a few years, right, Tiffany, I told that, right, you're doing all this work. I'm like, we need 5 COIs who refer 3 to 5 clients. That's what we're going to put all of our energy into. And like the referrals increased, then they got better, and we got more relation, right? And then Tiffany just took it to a whole new level, which was like, you're going to see and hear kind of all the right nuance she's added around. I want commitments, I want tracking meetings. Again, because what she learned was being friendly was a giant freaking waste of time. Like all that, it was like she wanted people who at least wanted to try and figure out a trusted partnership. To her point, some of them are going to be great referral sources, some of them are just going to be great resources. And sometimes that's going to be true. But it's about having a process for finding and nurturing those relationships, no different than marketing and lead gen. Versus playing whack-a-mole, where you just bump into people over the years, and some people you just know, you have 2 or 3 people you just click with, and it takes care of itself. And that's great, but you're not going to build a seven-figure practice on that. And you're certainly not going to grow one, right? So we have to figure out how do we architect more of those kinds of connections. And it turns out, like all other things, it's a game of quality and a game of numbers, right? The more standards you put in place, and the quality that you put in place, right? To our point, you're not looking for 50 COIs. You're looking for a few, right? So, Tiffany, I don't know if you remember, I think I have it somewhere We did like an Excel chart, right? That said, like, if we had average client one, two, three, and we mapped it out. And then we had like a rocket where we tracked the revenue, right? Like, are we on track? Because we were really trying to galvanize this idea when we talked about at the beginning of the day, or in Choose Your Channel or marketing plan, right? One of the first things you do when you set growth goals is figure out what the gap between now and the goal is. What's your average revenue per client? How many clients do you need? If you doubled COI and client referrals, what would happen? And for most of you, you'd get a lot farther than you think. And if you tripled it, what would happen? And so you don't have to hit 10 or 20x to get a really consistent kind of growth trajectory. And to Tiffany's point, you want to get a few and then they refer and then you get a few more and then you build that out. Like the bigger your firm is, the more you'll have. The smaller your firm is, the fewer you need. So let's talk a little bit. Oh, slides. Let's talk a little bit about that runway. So Tiffany, when Tiffany and I are building relationships or we're building processes for advisors, we're not doing the "I like you, it's lunch, let's get married." I like you, it's been great, let's get married. Again, someone once told me that did happen, so I cautiously use that example. It's much more that runway that we talk about, or the flywheel that Adam talks about, right? We're in the beginning. Doesn't feel like there's a lot going on. You're not getting a ton of referrals. You're not feeling the jive or the momentum. And you're just like, eh, is it working? Right? That's where you really want to start to build awareness. So, Tiff, do you just want to talk? Because I think they can kind of read through, right? We have that awareness slide, how we're going to make the approach, share the story, education, right? That's where we're establishing like who we are, what we want to do. Here's our brand story. This is where you're going to differentiate and position yourself. Engagement. Tiff will talk about her process in terms of this is where we're going to collaborate. This is not like, hey, let's do another lunch in 6 months. Not that that's not part of it, but you're going to collaborate. You're going to look for places to add value and you're going to deliver that value consistently so that they actually want to see and hear from you. Then you're going to partner. You're going to take the initiative and look for ways. To Tiffany's point, you're going to teach them how to be in a good COI relationship because you're going to do it all first. And then by nature, they're going to learn to reciprocate. Partnering, what's that team approach? So, right, how can you actually show up and do it in a way that they go, wow, this advisor is actually different than all those other advisors? So, Tiffany's not just like, hey, I'm nice and I have great hair. She actually shows up and has a conversation that makes them go, oh, okay. And she's, you're going to see and hear that, but I want you to notice these stages. And then ultimately, we're trying to do is establish mutual value and move to the commitment stage, right? So from curiosity to credibility to creating value, now I have permission to start asking for commitments. And then when you start to refer, I start to refer, we really get to collaborate and then curate that relationship. So they're like, wow, this is actually amazing. I need to be doing more of this. And that's where the flywheel, to Tiffany's point, it compounds. And then the second, third, fourth, fifth, 10th referral happen as a function of just partnering and having those conversations. You don't have to re-up every year, if you will.
No.
Yeah, I'm
Yeah.
going to take, well, I was just going to take us to, we talked a little bit about being different from the crowd, but I'm going to go to your, I'm just going to have you walk through your process.
Yeah. I'm like that runway and this kind of go hand in hand, but it's very similar for everyone here. It's the prospect process to new client onboarding, but now we're doing that with professionals, right? So we're upfront when somebody comes in the prospect process, we're trying to identify where are they at already on the buying journey. Same with like professional partners. Like, what do they already know about us? What do they know about wealth management? Do they value it? Have they seen their clients benefit from that? Have they themselves experienced it? What are their benefits? Also, on the other side, I'm doing the same thing from a COI perspective. Again, if you have a specialty, it really helps. So, when Destiny Capital has moved into really focusing though in on those in Colorado that are nearing or in retirement, and Entrepreneur Aligned is a more national brand that's focused in on closely held business owners, and it has a very differentiated approach in and the type of work that we're doing and the planning. And so that's really given us an idea on who we're doing our work with. And in the Entrepreneur Aligned side of things, we created what we call the Personal Wealth Operating System. And so one of my first questions to COIs is, do you know EOS? Right. And they will say, definitely know EOS if they're working with business owners. And it's a, a certain process. And I'm like, that's really interesting. Let's talk about this perfect, this personal wealth operating system that we have. And we can start creating these lines. And they're like, oh my gosh, nobody else is utilizing that. Now we see you guys exactly where you need to get. So I'm looking for commonalities up front, understanding where they're at in the process. If they have never had experience with wealth management, or they have they're not valuing it, if they're just putting us in the investment guide bucket, or something along those lines, I'm starting to get a hold of those flags so that I can understand how are we going to really maneuver in our relationship there, right? Are they be qualified COA, or are they a non-qualified COI? Am I going to refer them to a friend? Am I going to stop the conversation there, or are we going to engage even further? So just really looking. And when I started out, I was like, where do I even start in finding professional partners? One, our client base has a ton, right? So where are we already looking that's naturally under our hood? With business owners, they have interim CFOs, they have M&A attorneys, they have corporate attorneys, they have their tax person. Although, they typically are looking to move from their tax person oftentimes. They usually have like their coach, or they have their entrepreneur relationships. They're in EO, or they're in YPO, or they're in another organization with other business owners. And so I'm starting to look at, where are our clients spending their time, and who do they trust? So that's a great way to start a COI list. And then one of my two questions with every COI that I meet are like, who are your favorite professionals and why? And so then I start understanding it. And then one of my first questions is, they sound really great. I would love an introduction. Would you be willing to do that? So one, it shows me if they're willing to make a connection. We're opening the door and getting through a hurdle of making an introduction. And I'm starting to show up in this person's world in like three separate ways, right? Like I just had a one-to-one. The next time they go to lunch with the person they introduced me to, they're going to talk about us. And we're starting to evolve in that. But if you can get a COI to give you two names every lunch that you go, you're consistently building out, and they've already vetted these people. They usually like them because it's good business. And if you're serving the same clients, it's a great way to build. So that's a good approach to get a COI list. Steph, did you have something there?
No, I was just because we've got
Going
one second
through.
each of these. I was like, oh, I'm going to keep
Yeah.
up. I was trying to keep up.
Yeah. We can keep going through the slides. Yeah. And
And
then
I think
go ahead.
to Tiffany's point, this is no different than your sales process, right? There's essentially you're learning core systems, right? This is your COI system. The thing I always add here to Tiffany's point, if you're using COI as a marketing strategy, which if you have them, right? Or you want to devote some time to them because your clients all have those relationships. It is a longer term play, but you can absolutely see clients along the way, as with anything. And then to Tiffany's point, it could be you really can separate yourself from the crowd and build those longer term partnerships. But what you'll notice Tiffany's doing is she's leveraging each COI for additional contacts. So I'm going to give you a second strategy, and those two things are going to keep you busy for the next year unless you're brand new and have four clients, right? So one, if every COI you currently have as part of your COI campaign, right, think your service model for the year is to go to lunch and ask them nothing else, who are other people that you work with that you really enjoy that I might enjoy an introduction with. That would introduce, right? If you did that once a week, you would have at two names, you would have eight people a month, you would have 96 in a year, you would be way too busy to meet with all of them, right? Check that box. Second thing you can do, and I don't know why more people don't do this, probably because it's so glaringly obvious, is all of your clients have COIs. And interestingly, most of you don't have them all inventoried and cataloged. You might be having that data in your CRM, because your assistant is capturing it, which is great. The vast majority of you, I can guarantee you, are not using that data in any material way except from who's the accountant. We got to call and ask them for this form. When we have a list of all of our client COIs, so one, that often comes in the intake form that you ask them for. Two, a great opportunity to reach out to your clients particularly the top tiers and the ones you want to replicate, if you don't have that information, hey, we're really looking at building out our advisor teams. We can provide a holistic experience. We're looking for great CPAs. And who's on your team? Do you like working with them? Like, now I've got introductions and they're warm. You'll get 100 people on a list faster than you can say your middle name. And now you've got 100 people, whatever the number is, 27's enough to keep you busy for a long time, that you have a reason to reach out to and start a partnership with, not a sales engagement. Like, hey, we realize, right, we've been taking time this year. One of our priorities is to really get a clear view of our client's advisor team. Wanted to reach out and introduce ourselves, let you know kind of the work we're doing. We'd love to learn a little bit about your firm. We're always looking for good firms to connect with, right? You can, and then insert rest of process here. Like, that is so low-lying fruit. You could all do that tomorrow. And if I was like, call 5 people a day, depending on the number of people, you'd be busy for a while. And then each of those calls would lead to some meetings, which, if you like them, would lead to 2 more meetings, right? So it's this huge multiplier effect. That's why going, if you're in marketing plan, like, that's why you can just choose a channel and really focus on that channel to do it right. And it will keep you busy for 6 to 12 months. And then when you've nailed that, then you can go start another channel. But if you do what Tiffany did and you try to do 5 things at once or 15, you just can't get the traction. It's like trying to spin 5 flywheels. You just can't get the traction or the momentum that you need. So start with a list. If you have to call the AICPA and purchase the list, if you have to go to networking events, like, there's no shortage of ways to engage with COIs. Tiffany will also tell you, get creative. I don't know if it's one of the steps officially. Get creative about who your COIs are. It doesn't have to be, right, CPAs, estate planning attorneys, and insurance agents, especially as you have different client niches,
Yeah, that's
right?
exactly it. I mean, when you are really clear on your niches, there's so many that you can get into. I utilize entrepreneurs all the time that have exited their business and now are going into consulting. They naturally have a usually pretty abundant network of other entrepreneurs, and they're seen because of their exits as successful and they have influence. We're talking to EOS implementers as coaches. I have a mediator who specializes in business partnership breakups. Right. And there's always liquidity events there. So you can get really creative the more specific you know who you're serving and what that looks like. And then you're just not living in just estate planning and CPA world. Not to say that they can't be great referral sources, because they can. But as you can broaden and get more clear, there's just a lot more opportunities to who is out there serving your exact client base.
I had an advisor once who had a great referral source from horse vets. Horses, not cheap to have. If you're paying vet bills, it means you're spending a lot of money, which means, hey, you know, you're spending a lot of money. Did you know you can get a policy? I know an advisor, right, that has, like, she's super into horses and she knows all about it. Would you like it? Like, just has vets out there going like, hey, by the way, did you know I know someone who knows all about this because she's an advisor and she has horses, right? Like, it's her jam. Like, we have people who do stuff in the RVs of all things, right? Like, your retirement RV roadmap. Like, think about all the people. So to Tiffany's point, even if your clients are retirees, again, going back to the right niche and ideal client profile, what are your differentiation pillars and how can you play that up, right? Because you're essentially trying to do the same thing with your centers of influence. So start with a list because that's going to be your starting point. Next, you're going to make the approach, right? This is where you're essentially, right, whether they're warm or a brand new quote COI lead, right? You're going to build out like your sales process to Tiffany's point. There's script samples, Tiffany stuff is in there, right? What's your intro? Hey, new and current clients really like to ask me referrals. I'm always looking for a good few eyes in the area who specialize in working with entrepreneurs, working with tech execs, working with retirees who, right, blah, blah, blah. Right. So you can see some different examples. We have really advisors who are like, hey, I'm really looking at building out my advisor team for referrals. I'll happy to pay for an hour of your time. I'd love to sit down with you. And they're like, what? Like, that's credible in a way. Most of them, by the way, won't take your money, but it's really credible to say, right, I'm looking to build out, right, a team of referrals. I'm not looking to sell you or hawk you for referrals, right? I'm really, right, I'm operating at that professional level. So for existing relationships, as we talked about, you can go back and say, hey, you know what? I realize that we've both been working with Jane. There's been some changes to XYZ, or we're, you know, looking, right, really just want to bring you up to speed. Like there's always a bridge is what you're looking for that says, let me bring you into my world or let me enter yours. And in warm cases, right, with a, to Tiffany's point, if it's an introduction from someone or if it's a client's existing COI that you don't have a relationship with, that bridge is really easy to cross. So it's about having a script and then having a structure. Oops, I went crazy. Which you can see here. So we've got the referral roadmap, mastering referral messaging, the sample communication calendar. Tiffany, I don't know if you recognize that COI chart from 2017, 2018. It's probably a little more evolved at this point. This was literally that center document was what Tiffany tracked her center of influence relationships with in the beginning. No fancy spreadsheets, no CRM, like literally a page and right. The same document we give you, literally, like just get the information on each of these people in here, and then you can get fancy and put it in the CRM and tag it and build campaigns. Step one, do we have the information on the COIs? Have we built the list? And what you'll notice in Tiffany's is there's a profile. She went really like whole next level. Like this is like a client discovery process for her. She talks about them, their goals, what's working in your pra like there's so much business kumbaya, like, oh yeah, we always struggle with that. Finding good people is so hard right now, right? Like there's so much engagement and kind of relationship equity that can be built in the conversation that you can then parlay into through the rest of the process, right? Additional credibility, engagement, and ultimately referrals. So the reason I'm showing you these is not because you're done and you got to figure out how to fill in all the blanks. I'm showing you these because what you'll notice is there's a model or a system or a blueprint for everything, for the script. Again, even if it's just boxes to say, what's the information I want to use? How do I use that to enhance the relationship? How do I build a system around it? And again, we want all of our efforts to compound, meaning we don't just want to have a conversation and lose the benefit of it. We want to have that conversation, capture it, and then again, figure out how to put it in the system so we can leverage it, even if we're leveraging it later, which is a lot of what you'll do. And then at some point, after you make the invitation, and Tiff, you could talk about different ways for invites if you guys want, but then right, there's the meeting and there's, I call it the approach. She's asking for the date.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So once we've gotten into and we've uncovered that we're probably a mutual fit in the opportunities that exist ahead of us, like let's actually invest a little bit of time in this relationship. Let's open that door in a deep way. So this is like your deep discovery process, right? In the prospect process, I need to understand your services. Will you walk me through them? So like I make an introduction. What does that look like? What can they expect? What do you charge? How can I go through that? Give me an understanding there, right? So an EOS implementer would give us a 90-minute meeting and show us exactly how they would approach that. A tax specialist would say, here's the introduction, here's what we would do, let's go through that. Here's the range in which we would charge our fees. And so we work on just investing that time. I will meet with a COI. A lot of them will do it over Zoom now, which is really great. I appreciate that just because we can be effective in time. But with really good COIs, like I totally invest like the hour to 2 hours to meet with them in person. And then I always attempt to hear them first. So really, again, be the person who's asking them a lot of questions, inquiring about their business. They do ultimately ask you about yours. If they don't, that's a red flag as well. And come back around to give you the same opportunity to walk through your process and your value adds. So you want to be super clear on who you are, what who you do your best work with, what's that process, what are clear opportunities, like case studies and stories that you can share on where a door opening may be that they maybe haven't thought of prior, or as they're sharing, take those notes so that you can come back around to like the things that they're saying, and this would be a great opportunity to open a door, or here's how we've experienced that. And so that's the meeting, and being really intentional around that. Usually that meeting gets us pretty deep quick. And over the years, the referrals have come fairly quickly after that meeting, because we've just gotten so clear on the value prop and who we're actually taking that time with. Oh, but it took a lot of years of just going out and practicing in public our story with professional partners, and how do we truly inch ourselves into being their chosen person, and vice versa.
There's so much good stuff there. I want to highlight a couple of things around the meeting. Notice how Tiffany has that structure in place. She has her questions in advance. She knows what the agenda looks like. She knows what kind of outcome she wants. That'll evolve. She didn't start right at mastery level, but she got more and more clear and more confident. She also talked about opening the black box and sharing your approach, but notice she starts always with them, always from listening and learning, not from positioning and selling. And that is one of the mistakes. So we talked about playing the long game, right? We want that immediate effort, immediate reward. COI relationships, a lot like marketing, are immediate in their application. This lesson is immediate in its application, not necessarily in its results, right? But once that kicks in and the compounding effect kicks in, right, that's where it gets really valuable. The other thing is, and Tiffany, I know, does such a great job of this, and I don't want you to miss it, is with all love and respect, you make them work too hard for it by not standing out. Again, with the client profile. If you say my clients are wah, 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 everyone with anyone who has a need, and then they in their brain go back to their practice and they're just as busy and just as distracted and just as overwhelmed and right, servicing clients and all of that as you are, that, do the work of filtering through everyone and figuring out who to send to Christian is not at the top of my brain's priority list. That goes to the way, way, way back machine. You know, when it comes to the front of the bus again, when a client sits across from me and says, Christian, we've been thinking about financial planning. This tax thing is killing me. And then Christian goes, oh, wait, ding, ding, ding. But we want to shift it so that Christian's looking at the client case before they come in and being like, wow, I should really be sending these people to Tiffany. Like, it's really time because she's done such a good job of being like, wow, they're a couple, they're entrepreneurs, they're busy, they're delegating, and they've got big tax bills. Like, you want to sit across from someone and say, like, literally straight out loud, like, not like, hey, do you know, if you get some clients, you want to be like, if people have these five characteristics you want to send us in, we can add value. We're going to make you look good, whether they work with us or not. But if they are entrepreneurs, if they make more than 7 figures a year, they've got a fast-growing firm, if they've got big tax bills, and they're just trying to live their happy life with their kids and they're getting sucked in. Now what is happening in my brain? Cannot help it. It's there because it's unique and different. Now that won't be there forever if I just disappear again for 18 months. But if I show up in a week with that follow-up article and then I do a lunch again in a quarter, or I send like, hey, I got. So that, right, we'll talk more about value exchange. Like, hey, I have a client with a tax question. Can I pick your brain quick? Happy to pay for your time. Right. You're looking to get them to unpack their black box as well. So I actually have this thing I found the other week and I printed it out because I think it's really great. And I want you to think about it too. You see that? The biggest communication problem we make is we listen, we do not listen to understand. We listen to reply. That is so powerful in general. But I want you to think about it with the COI relationship. I'm showing up at the lunch and I'm going to ask you about your practice so that I can get to the other side and tell you about mine. I'm going to ask you about potential client referrals so that, right, I can get to the other side and tell you about mine. I'm going to ask you about yourself so that I can tell you how knowledgeable, smart, caring, professional, experienced I am. Get to the other side. That is not the goal. The reason that Tiffany's relationships really work and work faster than usual to her conversation is one, she's not afraid to stand out. She's making all things known. Two, she's setting expectations like, hey, this is what I'm looking for in a trusted partnership looks like. And she's laying that all on the table and then she's doing the work to see who wants to meet her in the middle. And those are the people that she's going to spend more time with. And so if you follow that, but we have to do it through the lens, you genuinely will want to listen to them through the lens of what is their process. Hey, tell me a little bit more about how do you handle that tax stuff? You want them to do 75% of the talking in the meeting because whoever does most of the talking tends to feel better about the meeting. Tiffany is amazing at building relationships. She's not going down a checklist. She way beyond average. Look at all the data that she's not like, what other associations do you go to? What do you like? Man, I struggle with networking groups. What do you like? She's getting like very quickly beyond the pleasantries into tell me what it's like to be you in your professional life. What are your clients' life? What are you guys struggling with? Are you dealing with lead gen issues? You're dealing with HR, man. We're struggling with HR. Yeah. Like right there's like so much good stuff to just bond over. Hey, you know, you got a lot of retirees as clients, or you know, is inflation a problem? Is there any, like, we've got a lot of really great resources. Is there anything I could send to you? Like, you're just listening to understand and then confidently but diplomatically inserting those seeding messages and expectations to just surface what you need to surface. So I don't want to, you know, this is not a show up, have lunch, let's check in a few weeks and see how it goes. Like that will get you the same exact mediocre result you came to this lesson to avoid. So the meeting is on purpose. You got to know what your goal is. You got to know what kind of conversation you want to have. You want to know, like Tiffany had that form and said, I have to fill in this form. That instantly put her in listening and curiosity mode, as opposed to sell and prove mode. You desperately want to avoid sell and prove mode because every other advisor shows up in sell and prove mode. And that's going to be part of how she stands out is she's curious, she's listening, she's genuinely interested in the relationship. It doesn't mean she likes them, and it doesn't mean they become great partners. She might decide by genuinely listening, they don't meet either of those criteria, or they might decide that. And that's okay. But the goal is to engage the process with that intent. Like, hey, let me put it out there, be real, see if there's a personal click, see if there's a fit click professionally. If so, we'll go through the process, and the process will determine whether we become partners or not, or to what extent. But we've got to get over that fit conversation and get some general agreement that they're interested in continuing, right? We got to get permission to call them up and ask for a second date. So that's really where that first meeting is in the process. Step five in that meeting, as we talked about, you're going to tell your story. And we kind of just dug into this. You want to see and hear and understand their needs. Hey, what are you guys struggling with? We're having a bunch of issues with staffing. How about you? Hey, is tax and inflation hitting your clients? Do you have a lot of clients with RMD issues, or do you have a lot of clients selling their practices right now? You know, when houses were, Tiff and I talked about this, right? Like W-2 income, not my strong suit. Actual income, right? Like different bank financing when you're buying a house. So when the markets were going nuts, that would have been a great conversation to have with all your CPAs and your COIs. Like, hey, so the idea is, you know, how do you really tackle this team player talk? So one of the really big problems that we see is everyone says they're a team player. How many of you genuinely show up like a team player? Remember, teams build a plan together, engage together, win, lose together, pick themselves up together, try again together, right? It's not all winning victory laps from day one. So to Tiffany's point, you want to get to know you. You want to share your client experience. You want to at least frame and ultimately get commitment around a partnership and whatever, right, you want to seed around that. And then you want to agree on a next step. After that meeting, you don't want to say, hey, let's check in a few weeks and see how it's going. Let's pick something specific.
And then, as we've reiterated before, like this isn't like a one and done thing. Like you can't just go share your story and then just be like, great, they totally loved me. They're for sure going to refer or anything along those lines. Right. And it's just like with a deep discovery process, like you're not, or a client comes on, like, you know, you're the point it's not just like, great, they said yes, and now like I sit, right? No, we have to get into like, what are those next step roadmaps? Like a new client, you sign engagement, we're going to collect docs, we're going to go through a kick, you know, your kickoff meeting, we're going to go through a financial planning meeting, an investment meeting, a risk management meeting, an optimized equity meeting. We're going to go through all of those components over the next 6 months. And so we need to really have that campaign of like, okay, we have to balance our time. So how much time are we physically or personally going to invest in that? What are ways to stay top of mind into their inbox? So last year we did a trial as a firm, and it's hard to know exactly if it is what led to more referrals and COIs, but truly the only differentiation that we made was we went to weekly inbox emails, inboxes that hit our COIs versus monthly. Felt like a lot, but our referrals went up and we were like, well, we didn't change anything else. So was it that we were just more top of mind? Because we also needed to be considerate of where my time was being spent as we narrowed in exactly who I was going to be spending that time with. So you need to have what is that ongoing new COI relationship building? And then once it gets into that ongoing, you're sharing now 6 to 10 relationships. So you're probably naturally talking to them once or twice a month around the client experience. We want to maintain more referrals. So how do we make sure that it's not all client experience, but there is BD components, and how do we separate those things? But what you're hearing is there's a process. What is the amount of time I'm spending with them one-on-one? Are there systems in place to stay top of mind or have case study components? And how do we continue to seek collaboration through that process? And so it could be events, it could be webinars, it could be a lot of different components. But as you can just hear me say, is what happened when I started was like I had the lunches and then I didn't have an ongoing process. So one, I wasn't being intentional on just really truly building that relationship, shifted that. But then it was like, great, being intentional about it. But now I'm like, I go back to client work. I go back to operational issues. Like I go back to all of the things. And if I don't have a process for them to fall into to make sure that I'm nurturing that relationship, make sure that those thank yous go out when they make their referral, making sure that like when I see something out or when I talk to another COI and their name comes up, but I make sure there's a system where it's like, hey, and now this goes to my executive assistant, but like, hey, I was at this meeting and they mentioned this person. It goes into an Asana card and she writes an email for me or a thing like, Tiffany was just at this lunch and your name came up. It was so great. If I need a meeting, that's a great trigger too to just say, and it's all in our cards now, but like, you know, this is a great time to follow up for a meeting. I need a 30-minute call or a 15-minute call, or we need to do an hour lunch because it's been a moment with that person. But it's the one to many and the one to one. And that's what you need so that you can nurture that relationship and then have some KPIs for success. First, you want little triggers like first client experience is happening. How do we follow up and see how it goes? Hey, did you appreciate the way we made that introduction? How do we feel about collaboration? Should we have been more involved? Were we too involved? How did that feel for you? Here's our experience from the client. So, because sometimes it can be bumpy. Sometimes it goes really great. So we're making sure that like there's trigger points, like the thank yous are going out, that we are following up on client experience and ensuring that for the COI, it went really well, not just for the client. And we really want to get into a place of just really nurturing those relationships. And then the ongoing happens. And now for most of our top COIs, I meet them quarterly and we have a pretty abundant and consistent amount of referrals from our top five.
And what you're seeing here is just breaking that into a systematic schedule at a high level first, right? So you're going to segment. So think of this as a COI service model. It's just focused on relationship as opposed to services, right? You're going to have segments, four basic ones, everyone, right? This is the stuff that everybody gets, the newsletter, the et cetera. You're emerging, right? This is that list of people you want to focus your time and effort on. We call these campaigns. I tend to do them quarterly. Christian's got 100 people on his COI list. We're going to make sure they get all the everyone stuff. And this quarter, we're going to pick 10 or 5 or 20, and we're going to give them a specialized, right, up and out campaign where we're going to meet them, we're going to send them stuff, we're going to get like whatever it is we build into that plan to see if we can kind of fast track that relationship, right? Have one of those double down conversations like Tiffany. Engaged, right? They're not necessarily on that list of people that we're trying to nurture, but they're already there. So this is like, right, the group we want to pay attention to and love on and keep through the process. And then extinct, right? We've tried, we've sent, we've loved, we've met, we've fooded, we've done it all. And they're not our jam. It's okay. They just go on the mailing list and you never know what happens someday. Again, you can segment them however is fitting for your practice. But what you'll notice is you can pretty quickly break down, hey, to Tiffany's point, everyone's going to be on the COI mailing list. Is that once a month, once a quarter, once a week, right? In this example, monthly, plus the emerging, right? Top 10, we're going to meet with them in person, right? The other 90, we're going to make sure there's some kind of a touch point, right? Because I can only meet with so many people in person. Engaged, we're going to do an in-person. We're going to give them our annual tax prep insert. We're going to do a specialized monthly touch point, right? In March, it might be pre-tax planning. In Q2, it's definitely going to be showing up at the office with goodies, right? If you're Tiffany. Extinct, right? They're on the mailing list. That's what they get. And so you can really quickly map out by segment, right? You don't want to invite every CPA you've ever known to a specialty event that costs you $150 a person. But you might want to invite 10 CPAs to a CE event around something cool, right? Where you can really try to spend some personal time with that group and amp things up. CE events, 4th of July letters, business roundtables. Tiffany's probably got loads of ideas. The idea is just what's your basic map and schedule? Because then you're ultimately going to have to execute it. And the goal in each of those steps, you've heard it throughout every bit of this conversation, is you want to intentionally show up as an invaluable partner. You're surprising, you're delighting, you're supporting. Oh, you know what? We had a client in that situation. I think I have an article on that, 1040 exchange, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Oh, hey, I've got a client with this issue. Do you think I could run this by you? Oh man, you want to make people feel valuable and like you, just ask them to help you and let them. And they, for some reason, like you more because you let them help. This is that we talk about the team approach. We don't truly take it. We get the referral, they go into a black box. We don't talk about the client or the situation. We don't ask how we can support the relationship. We don't set those expectations. Hey, I'll send you these docs at the end of the year if you'll send me X, Y, or Z. It's not particularly hard to stand out in this area, but when you do, you can really stand out. So that's where you, again, your firm, your capacity, your resources, but how can you really surprise and delight and support? If you're not using the referral roadmap, which is that five-step referral process, what happens when you get a referral? You should go do that right now because. Right? Just managing the referral well will get you more referrals because most people say thank you and never involve them. That's not the team approach, right? So you're actually going to take a team approach and it's five simple steps and you're going to be amazed. And then to Tiffany's point, they go into service once the client prospect becomes a client, right? Just the ongoing engagement solves for that. So again, there's components that you essentially want to go through as you lay the tracks and really start to optimize.
Okay, I think we just kind of hit on this too. This happens in this process because there's so many aspects of like you're setting up for this and that. But it's also really important when we're talking about the mutual client, but I've mentioned this, and it's like, how do we stay engaged with the COI and talk about the experience? How do I ensure that if they've made a referral and they didn't choose us, how do I make sure that that is not a bad outcome for both the COI, the client, and us? I need to talk to them about it. I can't just be like, oh, well, they didn't choose us. I always go back to the COI and let them know the outcome of the referral. So a lot of times that doesn't involve a lot of details, right? Because they may not be involved in their financial world or there's no permission base, but and it's really how do you handle the no to ensure that that prospect and the COI are in a really, really good place. You have to do that with client referrals, by the way, too. So it's a really important exercise to learn that when a client refers somebody and their person says no, or they're not qualified, How do we go back and either re-educate? How do we ensure that it's a positive outcome? Hey, here's how we took care of them this night. A lot of the times, the COIs I have found, especially our really proactive referring ones, like I now call it, I look in those relationships as almost like a pre-intro versus an intro. Like they'll kind of work the client to be like, you need to go and talk to Destiny Capital. And they may not have like a pressuring pain point, or they may have not asked for that referral. And so they may not be ready. And so we'll talk about that, or the COI will come back and be like, no, you know, like this is how they are. Here's what's going on. Or I figured it was a long shot. And so we then just have more of that conversation about like readiness and when is the right time, or how can we support somebody in that state? You know, here's what I did, or here's where I pushed them back to you. And ensuring that we just don't burn like the bridge or, you know, the hand that's feeding us. I look to have that conversation as well. If they don't call us, if we've referred somebody and they didn't choose them, oftentimes we're really involved because as a team, we stay super engaged on and almost every referral that we make from a collaboration perspective. And that's something we do share up front on how we'd like to work. If a client isn't feeling great or didn't like the process or doesn't feel like there's just a fit there, and the COI doesn't talk to us about it, we do have a process to follow up with our own clients and ensure that we have that conversation.
Yeah. And the details of that and the five steps of the scripts for the roadmap are in the five-step referral roadmap lesson. But Tiffany's point, right? She's taken that and she's implemented that in their firm, which is within 24 hours, you're always going to update the COI. The saying that I have is he who tells is swell, he who doesn't is to blame. If someone liked you but then got a little fee sensitive and they don't work with you, you look cheap. If you call Bob, the CPA, and say, hey, we really liked him. It looked great. I think you think you were so right. We really can add a lot of value. They seem kind of on board until the fee. Hey, there might just be some fee sensitivity there. I understand, right? Not everyone understands really the depth of planning and the value we can add. If you talk to him, really appreciate, right? I just understand, blah, blah, blah. Now I don't look like the cheap person, now the client, right? So now who's to blame? Well, the client's cheap or the client's not on board. Because to Tiffany's point, the most important thing is not getting the client in the first case. The most important thing is the process by which you manage the referral. Because if that feels good to them, which go if you go read the lesson and the five steps, you realize how easy it is to truly turn it into that team approach conversation. Like truly. In a way that's going to really stand out. It's also very simple and very systematic, which is what makes it work really great. And then
Yeah,
step
and
nine. Oh, go ahead, Tiff.
I was gonna hit step nine. So, and then over time, as you start to develop these relationships, you find what I would call like more integration. So now we're looking at like, you know, one of our top COIs is an estate planning attorney, which I know that that is not like very typical, but he is who he is. And I identified everything. We built the relationship. We have so many shared clients at this point that we're usually getting at least one to two referrals a month from him. Pieces that we've looked at is like, well, now how do we integrate you even more based off of like the amount that's going through and the services that we're doing? Like, is there this opportunity to almost hire him in, you know, in office or not, and build even more integration? We have one with a software as a service provider that really works with aging and care coordination. Super cool platform, tech platform that really helps clients through every process from finance to aging to care coordination to after loss and grief. And they have so many components there. Now we're like, well, how do I get that into a place of client? Looking at a client service model, how do we integrate that more so that we're utilizing that opportunity? And then that gives me a lot of opportunity to work on all of the people who are signing up for the software on the other side to then really get exposed to what we're doing. We start looking at shared content and shared email lists. Like we start looking at, you know, event sharing, or we start looking at like, COI mastermind groups, like they could be in one and it's a really good one for me to have. And now I only have to go, I see them once a month. And we're doing those components. We may bring them into a client advisory board. So this next level is like once you really know it's a good relationship and they're going to be a great partner for years to come and you're staying in connection with them, it's like, how do you get that truly integrated? And then that way it's just natural for everybody. And we've seen that over the years in a really big way. All of our top COIs are in a very like integrated role, not just with me from business development, because we do have that centralized in our firm underneath me, but also our advisors in the client experience and our marketing. And so that's a really great way to just really scale your COI process.
Yeah, and I think to Tiffany's point, there's a shift, and you don't know when it's going to happen. It just happens where there's truly a shift from referral partner to growth partner, where you're like, oh, we like them. We want to look for ways that the Smiths are coming in. Oh, we definitely want to refer them to Tiffany. Oh, yeah, he's cool. She's going to be the difficult one. Here's what you need to know. Like, they really will sort of unpack things. And again, if you go back to that roadmap lesson, you're asking questions and creating that team approach so that you get that kind of information, and that forms kind of the basis for a differentiated relationship. But at this level, it really is you're sitting around just looking for ways to add value and support each other's growth because you've kind of passed the trust and relationship part. Now you really are partners in growing. And as we've talked so much about, what you're really trying to do, aside from playing the long game, is the one thing where most people fail and fall down is you're truly trying to take that team approach. Again, in how you communicate on the front end, here's what we're looking for, here's what we can do for you, here's what it would mean for you in terms of us, right? You're walking them through their process and your process, you're engaging with them consistently, you're keeping them completely looped in on every prospect and every client on an ongoing basis. Like, they all want that, but right, most of the advisors that they engage with aren't delivering that. And so, as you hear me say so often with all of the systems that we build in practice, right, when you go out and you apply this, if you work the plan will work. So, Tiffany outlined hers. We've got the workbook and loads of resources and samples and scripts and letters and charts. Tiffany's resources, right, her versions of those are all in there and well. This is an example of one of those, right? I don't, it may have evolved since then, but right, this was how she built out that process. So notice again, there's a process, just like your sales process. So you have a sales process for COIs, and you have an onboarding process for COIs, and you have a service model for COIs. For example, to Tiffany's point around experience, right, in year three of our roadmap, we'll get deeper into this, but you can jump ahead if you're there, which is the first referral is always the most important because you want them to repeat the behavior regardless of what happens. So when you get the first referral, that's great. What you can do, like you know, referral gifts and thank yous and all that cool stuff. But when you close that first client, can you do something special? Like, wow, this was our first, right, game together and we crushed it. Go us is different even than like your standard high five. So you really want to look at how you engage all of those steps.
Yes, and this is a process to build these relationships, and so I try to and we really want to think about our time too. COIs, when you think of cost of client acquisition, right? So there's a formula that we utilize on dollars and time spent. So take your hourly rate and the amount of time that you are. So the spaghetti at the wall is we all strategies work, we just can't work all strategies. So we're looking at the trade-offs in the strategies that we're doing, and our time is a component of that. Why I liked COIs to start was because it felt less of a financial cost up front when I was doing it, and it was the time commitment, and I was like, great. And then it was like, how do I get intentional about that time? And now I'm really thinking through cost of client acquisition at my hourly rate for the firm and how intentional we have to be in that COI process. But you're really thinking through each piece of that. And the reason we need to get intentional about that is because it can get really costly in lunches and gifts and time if we are re reaching out with everybody and not starting to narrow it down. So in this process, when I built this years ago, I was like, how do I get to five? Like, how do I get to five? I ended up upping the number to seven because what I found is as soon as I had five that we're referring, it's like any given year, there's one or two that are down a little bit just because life happens or business happens or economy happens or whatever it is, right?
Retire.
Like retire. Yeah. And so if I have seven, I'm always getting to like that 20 referrals or 25 referrals that we're looking for from COIs every year. And so I was like, how do I get there? And I'm like, I'm going to start with 25 and see if I can't get at least one out of that 25 and get through that 3 meeting process, get to the commitment, go through the 6 months of or 1 year relationship building. And then did we get a level of referral? So the same way I would hire a business development professional, like I wouldn't expect them in a, day one to just get to the numbers that we're looking for consistently on a monthly basis. So, in that first 6 months, did we at least have one experience in some sort of level of referral that we can look back on and share? Even if it didn't end up being a client, with like, did we get over the hurdle of like
They
a
try.
referral being made? Was it qualified or non-qual, right? Like, how do we start just really evaluating that? And then, are they an influencer or not, really comes in that post 1 year to 2 year relationship. It's a longer game. Honestly, for some of my best COIs, it was just a matter of a little bit of growth and experience for them. And it took even longer than that, 3 to 5 years. But up front, if you can get to one to two, and now I'm balancing client referrals with COI referrals, and I've upped it. So now I'm getting 6 to 10 COI referrals from one to two. Now I'm just like, okay, this process works. How do I keep building those relationships and seeing where there's signs being shown? And then eventually you have your seven, and that makes it pretty nice, right? If I'm doing quarterly meetings with seven, okay, that's what is that, 28 meetings. And then for most of those seven, I end up being in a mastermind group with them. So I'm meeting them monthly on top of that. They're on our content. And then we have usually client experience with most of them. So it just continues to compound. And then I'm really just super thoughtful about anyone else entering that circle at this point, because as a firm, we don't necessarily need it. So we get to be on the other side of building those relationships on like who's really going to be a great fit for us, and how do we expand that? And or how do I now transfer that to our advisors, right? I have my seven. So now how do we, anyone coming through the doors, do we train and just continue to scale that for the growth of the firm amongst other people? And so you create your playbook and then you just consistently nurture it. And gosh, it feels so good to meet with my favorite people in business that we've grown together over the years, versus filling every lunch, and having the same first dates over and over and over.
Well, and
So the process is good.
the thing I like that you said, one, for if you build that structure for yourself, it's more efficient, it's more effective, it's more enjoyable. If you
Yeah.
have other advisors in the firm, it's suddenly replicable. Whereas COI relationships were 100%, and the relationship does tend to live with the person. Again, you can't build that relationship with the firm brand, but the ability to say to someone, here's a structure. Here, give me the list of 100. You're going to do 2 meetings in 10 days. Like that map that we filled in suddenly becomes a lot easier if you say, here's meeting one, here's meeting two, here's meeting three. Here's an outline for the meeting, here's an agenda for the meeting, here's some scripts for those conversations, right? So this is Tiffany's relationship building process resource. If you can hand that to someone and then say, I'll do some meetings with you, right? And then they can see that learning curve just went from like a decade again to like 3 years, where they are literally like, hey, I got new COIs and they're generating business independent of Tiffany and the firm, right? So again, nail the one home base. Tiffany's got it figured out now, right? She's in a position to replicate that model with her advisors. For them, advisors are a channel, right? Because, right, they're using those advisors in this case, right, to build those COI relationships. So that's sort of a good overview of the funnel. Here again are the meeting overviews. You can, as tends to happen when you get good and proficient with the sales process, with the referral roadmap, with this, you'll be able to truncate it. You don't want to start there. The goal is to create a very specific outcome in each meeting, and like dating, right? It ensures like you're getting the next yes and you're getting the next yes. You can do it all at once if you're Tiffany or you're really proficient, but you want to be careful that you don't try and shove all of it into one meeting and go from like, hey, do you like me and do you want to get married in a 90-minute lunch, right? Because again, the goal at this point isn't to be hyper efficient. The goal at this point is to build the relationship equity when they're ready to be like, I don't know, here's an email I give you up to Christian, here's the 411. You'll be like, all right, thank you. Until then, you're like, hey, I would like to chat and get your feedback about this client. They'll skip that when they're ready. So get really clear about that onboarding, like that vetting process. And then other things you can do around, as we've talked about, right? The meetings, the referral processes, the center of influence. We have a whole profile sheet. If you want to go back through your center of influences, if you've got a bunch of them, you're not going to do 100 at once, but thinking about those campaigns, right? One of your base campaigns might be, right, update 5 COI profiles a week. It's a good opportunity to reach out, to reconnect. It's a good opportunity to go to lunch, right? Like, how can you integrate updating your COI structure and getting right this information or things into your process? Building a client or a COI advisory board, which Tiffany has done a number of times with great success. And then obviously all the guidebooks and resources on the COI relationships in general. As always, follow-up work. There's some great reading. How to adapt and apply. Again, it's right, go to those guidebooks and resources. We've done the heavy lifting and created the shortcuts based on proven practices. And you've got our samples, Tiffany's other advisor alumni samples. And right, then you're gonna like kind of take that suit off the shelf. And Christian, you're gonna tailor it a little bit, right? You're gonna tweak it and make it fit you. If you're like, hey, I hate the idea of a third meeting, don't do it just because it's on the form. Like, try to. And don't discount the process, right? Ideally, follow the process as given. And then, when you've really got it and you're comfortable with it, then you can really start to tweak it and make it your own. And you'll do that with a lot more confidence. So, the goal when cultivating COIs is to recognize that we aren't building a referral source, we're building a trusted partner, ultimately, a growth partner. Which means we have to be as involved and invested in their success as we're asking them to be in ours. And if we're honest with ourselves, we don't play the long game. We don't take the team approach, and we don't take the time and the discipline to consistently invest in working the plan in a way that will get the plan to work and deliver the results that we want. So there's just a lot of opportunities to optimize the low-lying fruit that we tend to step over when we're looking for the next shiny, sizzly marketing idea. And really, just in this conversation, you could see, not even counting clients, center of influences could keep you busy for the next 12 to 24 months. It's kept Tiffany busy for quite a few years. So hopefully that gives you a good grounding on how to cultivate those relationships in a way that drive growth that's aligned with your goals for the practice. So we've got 15 or 20 minutes, and we've got some questions, I think. Leona said, you want to, I can't see those
Yeah,
at the moment.
Christian has a couple questions. So if you want to jump in, Christian, and ask those.
Yeah, I could probably take the whole 15 to 20, but I'll keep it brief. The first question is, so I have a co I've been trying working the COI model for a bit, and there's been, a couple of referrals here and there. And there's one particular I'm thinking of for this, but I'm trying to have some of those up and out conversations and be a little more intentional because I don't think I was a little hesitant to be as direct as maybe Tiffany is typically, but I've gotten to the point now with some of the M&A we've done where we're at a more comfortable point revenue wise, and I'm getting closer to that kind of a capacity. So I'm more confident, I guess, in a way to say, hey, if you're not like, we've got a great thing here, you can be a part of this or you can not. And I'm fine either way. But just how direct is too direct? Like, is just coming in and saying, hey, this is, we've chatted about this before. Here's our ideal client. Do you have anyone in mind you think that could benefit from chatting with us? And essentially, if nothing comes out of that, put them more onto the nurture list or kind of how direct is, I guess, too direct?
If I'm going to let you lead this one.
And Steph can follow up too. So, typically I go into those, not necessarily like this doesn't seem, it that I typically go in as a re-education opportunity always to start to say, hey, we've been working together for a while now and just want to make sure that this relationship is in a really great spot for us to refer. And so I go into the opportunity there to say, especially with where you're at, more confidence, more stuff under your belt, more to share, like really have refined your client service model. You just learned all the offerings. So I just get into the, like, you know, it seems like something's just not working in this relationship to really ensure that we're in a great place to collaborate amongst clients or maybe open that door. Do you want to explore going through that one more time and seeing if we can't, you know, really get this to work? It's not that, and like, I never get to like a ghosting component or, you know, occasionally I have to have those direct breakups just because it's like, they find the value is inviting me to like play golf every Thursday or something along those lines. And I'm like, that's just not going to be for me. And so appreciate that. We want to kind of live over here. We can. But for the most part, I give it the opportunity to say, let's get more clear and see if we can't get more consistency or opportunity out of this. If it doesn't, then it's more of an internal process of like, I'm not taking those lunches anymore or those meetings anymore. And I may have a one, you know, once a year phone call for a period of time if there's been a relationship there and they eventually just go on a nurturing. So we kind of have like an off-board process if they don't move up or move out, you know, like it is a move up or move out because we have to protect our time. But just hearing where you're at, it sounds like you can come back around and just put it on the table, which I've done a lot of times to say, you know, there seems to be just like something missing that we just can't quite get our, you know, fingers on in this collaboration. And so like, why don't we explore that? And that is usually, especially if we've been a lead referrer in that relationship, like I oftentimes see them coming to the table with like, here's where I've been struggling. Here's what's happening. Cause you're without having to be too direct or harsh or mean, just saying, I'm looking for this to do better. I'm looking for this relationship to get more of its footing. And over time, especially if you didn't have those upfront commitment conversations, now with the upfront commitment conversations that we have, I'm like, it's been 6 months and we didn't get there. What do you think the issue is? And we can have more of that direct conversation because it's already been on the table. If it's relationships that I didn't have that, then I'm going in with a, I feel like I haven't fully explained my process, or maybe you don't know yours. Like, how do we get to a place that we can have real synergy here? Because I believe in this relationship, but we all both have only so much time that we can invest. And I want to make sure that it's really great for both of us. Let's revisit this.
Yeah. Because with the one I'm thinking of, like, we sent three referrals because after the third one, they said, we're not actually taking on any new clients because they're just at their capacity. And I know in the past, he was even as forward as saying, yeah, like I found a really great way to kind of put a referral to you in our fee conversation because we bill on an hourly rate, not a flat fee, and us working together can save the clients some money because it's less time if we can work together. But just nothing has come from that. So it seems like, okay, the intention is there. I'm just struggling on like, how do I sit down and say, okay, you said this, you know, we referred you, we work together really well. Like we've had a lot of great conversations working with clients. Like there's just hasn't been that, like the reciprocal side of it. And I know just going in and saying, hey, I've referred you clients. You haven't referred anyone what gives is a great way to just tank that relationship.
That is a great way to tank it for sure. But I do think since he put it on the table that we built this into this fee conversation. We saw a lot of value there for you to come back around and say, hey, I would love to like learn more about how you're putting us into that conversation. And is there anything that I can do to benefit you? Is there any resources I can provide? Why don't you walk me through it? Right. And you can get right into, he said it. You put it there. Also, what I heard is that they're not taking on any clients. So if reciprocity was kind of the commitment up front, there would be referring on both sides, but they're no longer taking it. I think you want to go in and explore, like, where do you fall in that relationship? So, hey, it sounds like you're at capacity from taking on new clients, as you suggested. Like, what does that mean for our relationship? Like, what are your clients' needs? What are your needs as a firm and as a business owner? And how do I come back to support you, knowing that maybe this relationship has just shifted a little bit in where we were naturally thinking of synergies? And that helps a lot because it gets into, now he's meeting you as a business owner to business owner, and there may be conversations there. And so I think there's a couple ways you can approach that. But I do think that there is a dynamic shift when they're no longer taking on clients. And if they were putting you in that bucket, you want to come back around to, how do you get a place where maybe now they're feeding you referrals and they're still finding a lot of value in you in that relationship, which can be great, whether that's through client experience, it's taking stuff off their plate, or is there just operational structure that you can quickly help them with to make that like seamless and easy?
Yeah, I think all of those, like just the curiosity conversation. Hey, like you're revisiting it. You're not blaming or judging it. You're saying, hey, we had talked about this. I know you guys are so busy, you're not even taking new clients. So I just wanted to check in on where this is. Have you been able to implement it? How's that been going? To Tiffany's point, how can I help? You're trying to kind of just reset, like bring it back to the top of their attention span and be like, hey, remember? And then you're using that. So to Tiffany's point, if you haven't had the upfront conversation, they're not ready for the up or out. They're ready for the re-entry into the upfront. Hey, right, I realized when we started talking, we really liked each other and wanted to put this together. I've been doing this, right, for a while now. We've been able to put some structure together, really figure out how we can leverage this relationship more fully. We've already been able to send you a few referrals. I know you guys have been super busy. I'm guessing that's the reason you haven't been able to send, send a bunch back, but I just wanted to check in. Have you been using that process? How's it working? Right. So now I've just really nicely incorporated all those things that Tiffany talked about. And now I've basically said, I need to check in and see if we're resetting. And now we're going to re-agree, right? Alignments and agreements. Like, hey, what do you guys like? How can I help over the next 90 days? You guys are obviously not taking new clients. How can I help you add value to the clients you have to make sure that their planning needs are met? I know you guys are busy. Are you guys, do you want to sit down and have a conversation about how we can integrate into that partnership, handle billing, whatever it is, right? Like you can literally at that point say, would you like to have a conversation about? And they can say yes or no. And at that point, again, you don't start there, but that's kind of what you're moving to. All right. Looks like Peter and Dan and Sam have some questions. So, Christian, if you have more of those questions, obviously jump on calls or Tribe, and we're happy to help. But hopefully that gets you into gear on that. Awesome. Peter, are you there? I'm gonna go fast in the interest of time. Dan, are you
Yes, I
there?
am. Yes, I
Okay,
am.
Peter. Sorry. Come
Sorry.
here.
Yeah,
Sorry.
no,
Getting
I'm
you off
just
the bus.
very slow on the fingers.
No worries.
Okay. I had written in the Q&A, a bunch of CPA firms are considering wealth management as an attractive additional offering. Many know it's also challenging to implement. Can you please discuss CPA solicitor relationships as a distinct COI approach?
Okay. Tiff, do you have anything there you want to add? Have you guys done any of that?
We haven't gotten into a solicitor agreement with CPAs only because we haven't had to, because we found the ones that are willing to refer in a different type of collaboration. I do think that all the strategies work, and I've seen firms implement that very successfully. As far as wealth management being integrated into a CPA firms, I think the solicitor agreement is different than, yeah, the other side of it. If, one of my uncovering upfront is, do you have wealth management in-house, right, with any sort of lending, banking, CPA, those types of things? What does that relationship look like? How do you build your business? Because if there's just conflict of interest, it just won't go very far. So I think if that's in-house, I think the solicitation agreement works well. You just have to be super clear on how you're going to message that to clients because you're putting that out there on both sides. There has to be something that is signed and acknowledged that there is a fee for referral and there's a level of conflict of interest associated with that referral. So when you don't have that down, that can not go over as well. But it's a great way for CPAs to add a little line of income to what they're already doing. And if you find a good one that has the right clients, so again, go through your uncovering process, make sure who they're serving are the right clients for you, that they're willing to make those referrals. But I think a pay to play is a good strategy if you can work it really, really well.
Yeah,
Thank you.
it goes back to the buy cost versus build cost. Tiffany's way really works. If people are motivated to get, look, it does not take an accountant very long to figure out that you guys make a lot more money. You have different liability, but it's like, and you're not doing tax season and all the nitty-gritty nasty. Like they're like, what? Now, some of them realize that's not my jam. I don't want to mess with that because, right, if you're not going to go all in, you really shouldn't do it. Some firms, we've done loads and loads of, right, building wealth management inside CPA firms. What you're really talking about, Peter, is almost always going to be a smaller or, right, depending on the firm, a solicitor relationship for a smaller firm, right? Someone like you is, hey, I love this idea of helping clients and I love the idea of getting in on it, but I recognize I don't have the leverage. So that's your like 1 to 5 person accounting firm, particularly as they age. Larger firms do that too. Larger firms will make a decision about insourcing or outsourcing. Outsourcing with a mid-size, right? Like a 5+ person firm up to a big firm can be really great, right? Just because when they get compensated, that tends to increase their motivation. Tiffany's point, you just have to find people that want to do it. You put a structure to it. You're not making this up on a case. Do not do that. I see it all the time. It is on a different deal for every firm. It is, this is the model. This is how we pay you. This is what you give us. This is what we give you. You will give us these reports every year. We will do these things. And then to Tiffany's point, you can then say, hey, this is how compensation works as a function of, right, Peter referring you over to us. We'll be sharing, just full disclosure, we'll be sharing 20% of your fees with Peter. One, he is a partner in this relationship. We'll be working with each other, right? You can just basically say he's a partner. Of course, he's getting paid. It's a really nice way to frame that out. They're like, of course, he would get paid. He's doing work. So you can absolutely do that, but don't, like, it's not a like, I'll do it here and then I'll do it there. Like, pick a strategy and play the strategy. You can do it really well if that's your model. Like, just to Tiffany's point, where she's done it with relationship equity, you're doing it with real equity, and you're, but you're laying it all out. Here's the conversation, here's the offer, here's the offer, here's what we'll do. Comes off as very serious and real. No CPA wants to hear, I'll give you part of the re revenue and I'm winging it as I go.
Okay, fair enough. No, I was just curious if there were any, sort of documents or models at all that you had to sh share as I'm
I
working
don't think there are in the library. Very few people do that. There are some firms that do it at scale. They literally go out and build those partnerships. But you're going to use very similar models. The only difference is, you're going to build a service model with them. Like, here's my one page service model. Here's what I'm going to give your clients. Here's what you're going to give me, right? We're going to give you these forms, et cetera. And all the get to know you stuff. And then essentially your solicitor agreement. Everything else is the same.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. We are headed into break. I know there's a couple more questions, so I will hang out if any, who's still here, who had the questions? Dan and Sam, if you've got questions. Other than that, you guys have a short break, and then we'll see you at the next session in about 15 minutes.
So, Stephanie, I just have a simple question, but so I focus on PG&E, which is a power company out here in California, and I'm also an enrolled agent. So I have not like I can't really find a professional that, oh, I specialize in doing taxes or I specialize in doing whatever for PG&E employees. So I'm just trying to figure out. I've just used LinkedIn as my way to try to find clients, but I can't really find, I think, a natural fit for a aligned professional that would focus on PG&E.
Tiff and I can brainstorm. Like, natural is obviously HR people, but there are very few of them. And right, you've got to know them or crack the code or get into them. But right, it is something to explore. We have clients that do that really well with social, email, and webinar strategies. So you could, with, again, this is not so much a COI strategy. Again, when someone's in a captive audience, particularly an employer, the HR department is the gatekeeper. Again, if you're one of a lucky handful of people, you make that relationship. Otherwise, you are locked out forever via the corporate channel, but you can market around that. So, like with PG&E, are there accountants in the area? Right. And there will be accountants that have PG&E clients. So you could go to them and be like, hey, this is what I do. So for all your PG&E clients, those are the ones you should refer to me.
But so yeah, like that's where I guess I'll just say that's where my resistance has been, because as an enrolled agent, I don't think many CPAs really want to network with me on that front. But when I pre-pandemic, I was doing work with the
Oh,
employee
that's right.
relation groups and could get in and do presentations, but now they don't go to an office, so it's virtual. So I can go in and do a webinar, but there's no way to get the names or any of that to
Well, there is.
go
So that's
to.
where you're going to go watch like the webinar lesson. All of the, whether it's emails, webinars, blogs, newsletter, they all have one purpose. And the purpose is not to get a client. That's a secondary purpose. And it does happen, which we like. The primary purpose is to get people's email, because email is the one way that you get permission to get their attention when you choose, assuming you can catch, write a catchy headline. So that is ultimately the goal. So to your point, like when you do those webinars, you're not, I mean, you're going to be like, hey, if you want a 20-minute call, but you're going to be like, here's your right? PG&E guide, right? The 10 PG&E.
Okay, so just a lead magnet type, because when I do the webinars, we're doing it on, but when we do the webinar, it's on their platform. That's why I don't have access to.
So what you're going to want to do, go watch the webinar thing, whether it's email, webinar, the content, right? The channel, the funnel, to watch online funnel is essentially the same. But you need to give them some value trade, right? A download, a call to action, a free video series, a free assessment, because you're trying to get their email so that you then have permission to market to them from there. So for you, email lists, because you can purchase those lists. Social media, you can, right? People put their employers, so you can geolocate in there. So webinars, like what you're going to want to do is use social media, email, et cetera, to drive your mailing list. And that mailing list is then going to go into things like webinars, offers. Hey, here's my six, you know, part video class on how to retire from PG&E, right? You literally, webinars are cool, but you like, you're building up a list, so you can only do them so often. You're not going to do one a month to start. So you don't want to wait once a year to do a webinar.
Yep.
So that's where you can do like a video series. Like, here's my 3-part series on PG&E. And at the end, there's an offer, right? So you're looking to really build a marketing funnel more than you're looking to do COI marketing with them.
Okay, beautiful.
But the construct is exactly the same.
Gotcha.
Awesome. Right, Sam, are you there?
I am here, but I can wait till, go ahead and take your break. I can ask the question of Tiff next week.
Totally up to you. You're my whole day, so you can ask me if you want. Well, if you want to ask Tiffany, you can.
I guess what I'm asking, what I wanted to ask is, I get literally all of my referrals from COIs. And my niche is estate planning, complex clients, and trusts. And I need probably 3 or 4 more good COI relationships and another 60 or 70 ideal clients. And then I'll weed out other clients. Based on everything I just watched, it's all the COI cultivation is based on one-on-one relationship building meetings with COIs. So when I think about all of the other marketing channels, I mean, do I really need to be doing digital, video, et cetera, to build credibility?
So what we talk about in the marketing plan lesson is your, when we think about choosing your channels, you're stacking the wheel. You're going to be on social some, because you should be on social some, right? Whether that some is right posting once a week on behalf of the firm and you never touch that, or like Sam's on there being an influencer, is a strategic choice that you're going to make. But to your point, like we always say, look at clients and centers of influence, right? The two most immediate channels, and ask yourself, right? Can you double or triple there? And if you can, it's your low-lying fruit. Do that before. Now, if you know you want to grow, like you're like, look, I'd love to do a podcast, or I want to, like, I'm really love the idea of moving in that direction. You can spend, you know, 70 or 80% of your time working your immediate channel and 10 or 20 or 30% of your time working on what I call the runway project. Hey, I'm going to work on this podcast or this blog or this whatever. And over the next, right, 1 to 3 years, that's going to become, right, a really nice pipeline, but I'm going to optimize here and I'm going to invest a bit here, right? It's a bit of a diversification strategy, but you're going to spend most of your time, right, on optimizing those relationships. If you had 7 good relationships that referred you 3 people a year, that's 21 people. Right. So 5 relationships that refer you 4 people is 20 people a year. So right, in 3 years, you hit your 60 person goal. So you could go do 10,000 things and spend a whole bunch of money and effort and learning curve and all that. Or you could be like, all right, I need to find 5 really great COIs. And that's my mission for the next 12 to 18 months.
Yeah, that's what I
literally
figured.
It really notice how you listen as you go through the day. You're just cutting out all the stuff you don't need, getting good at what you do, working the heck out of that plan, and then optimizing and adding as it makes sense. I was talking with Brian and Jed, who many of you have been in the program for a number of years. They've hit their $1 million mark. They're taking their time off. They're great. And they both told me, they're like, didn't do a lot of growth stuff. Just did all the right sizing and the clarity and the plans and the service models, and then focused on clients, centers of influence, and we're there, we're done. Like, now what? You know, like we don't need to turn on a big growth engine, because just running a tight practice and doing basic marketing well over a couple of years will get you there, right? And then you can turn on the fun stuff if you like. We love the fun stuff, it's great. But like, don't step over clients and COIs before, because it's A, it's easy, B, it's valuable, and C, right, it's where you have the greatest opportunity to grow.
Perfect. Thanks, Deb.
You're so welcome. All right. If you have not taken a break, go do that or I'll get in trouble because you'll say on the surveys that there was no breaks and I officially gave you one. You just chose not to take it. Remember that. All right, you guys, I'll see you in 7 minutes.